Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, March 30th, 2014. This is episode 1070. Enjoy! The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. Our cloud-based phone system just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs. And RingCentral starts just under $25 per month per user. You try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. And by NatureBox, where you can order great-tasting, healthy, delicious snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy treats like citrus chipotle chickpeas. They're good. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, and it's time for the Tech Guy Show, the show where we talk about geeky stuff like computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. You know what I'm talking about. The fun, the toy store, the fun stuff, the stuff that's changing the world around us. We'll not talk about any missing airplanes today. We won't talk about war, famine, hurricane, global warming. No, we just talk about technology, fun stuff, light stuff, but stuff that is changing everything. You look like a princess today, by the way, Heather Hammond, phone
Thanks.
Ranger.
I'll take that anytime.
Is today dressed like a princess day and I didn't know? Did I miss the memo?
Someday
anyway,
my prince will come. I don't know. Last time I wore
Keep
this,
kissing
you said
the
I
frogs,
like,
young lady, and yeah. I will.
Boy, have I been! and howdy.
Now, I told people we would be only talking about good stuff today. No bad news today, but you do.
I
you
love
look
frogs.
Lovely. You look lovely, and it's I guess because the sun has come out. Spring is here. March goes in like a lion, and tomorrow will go out like a lamb.
That's a goat. Say it with me.
Bah. Oh, bah. Not nye. Right. Bah. Gosh. Go. I haven't spoken ovine in a long time. I'm a little rusty. I apologize.
Remember the lamb on The Simpsons? Lisa, don't eat
don't
me.
Don't eat me. why
Sorry,
do I feel like old
about?
McDonald is going to make an appearance sometime? My lamb accent is rusty. So let's see what's been going on in the world of tech. Microsoft released Office for the iPad and Android at the same time. Is that a big deal? It's a big story? I guess it is. I mean, everybody's making a big deal about it. I don't know why. I don't think people are jumping up and down. Oh boy, I can't wait. But it is a free download. In fact, CNET figured out how you can, just basically steal it, borrow somebody's password, and then just use it. And Microsoft says, well, we're going to just trust our users. We're not going to try to tie that down. Are you looking for a trustworthy user somewhere? She's craning her neck. I think it's actually quite nicely done. And if it's a example of what Microsoft plans to do with a touch interface on Windows 8.1, I think it's quite nice. That is the rumor.
Question or comment for Leo?
That is the rumor, anyway. I'll let Heather go back to work. Microsoft kind of got in a little trouble this week because they turns out they were reading somebody's email on Hotmail, but they had a good reason. The one of their employees was stealing a Microsoft company secrets and Here's the good news. He was a loyal employee. He was using Microsoft's email service, Microsoft Messenger, Microsoft's cloud storage, SkyDrive. So he was very loyal to the company while he was stealing the company's secrets, sending him to a French blogger, a French tipster. And perhaps, I mean, that's maybe being generous, perhaps pirate, because they were sending out source code for software and stuff to the guy. And Microsoft said, well, we don't need a subpoena because we own this, so we could just, you know, we'll just open the Hotmail box and see what he's sending. And, you know, we found out recently, but it was all before the Snowden revelations. People have gotten a little sensitive about this idea. And frankly, maybe Microsoft encouraged it by their ads. Remember the ads, the Gmail man's reading your mail? It turns out it's Microsoft reading your mail. So they said, well, we'll never do it again. But many, many people were at pains to point out that all the big email services, including Google and Yahoo, in their terms of service, have a line that say, you know, if circumstances warrant, we can read your mail and will. We reserve the right to do so. Like a human reading it, as opposed to the kind of machine reading that all email services do. They do that partly for anti-spam purposes, but also partly to figure out what you're interested in so they can show you some appropriate ads. Microsoft is very proud of the fact they don't do that. So their ads are completely random. They still show you ads just for things. I keep getting ads for chicken wire. I don't. Maybe because I'm in Petaluma, they think I need chicken wire. I don't need chicken wire. I have no use. But they keep showing me that ad. See, I'd rather see an ad for something I want. That's just me. Anyway, first Microsoft said, all right, we're not going to do it again. But if this comes up again, what we'll do is we'll hire an attorney who used to be a judge, so you could trust him. And we'll ask him, judge, ex-judge, former judge, what do you think? Can we read this guy's mail? They said we were going to try to rise to the standard that we would have to rise to if we were trying to read mail somewhere else. You know, because if you're Microsoft and you want to read mail on Google, you have to get a court order. You have to get a subpoena. So we'll have that be our standard. And then people said, you know, that's not good enough. So now they've said, well, all right, we will subpoena ourselves. And this is what they should have done. If you think about it, they should have gone to law enforcement and said people are stealing our stuff. And then the law enforcement officials do the proper investigation, and nobody at Microsoft's reading your email. In any event, they calmed down. They said, we're going to do it from now on that way. That's good. I guess good news. All it underscores is, if you think that your email is in any way private, it is not. But you knew that anyway, didn't you? Remember when the head of the CIA... he was General Petraeus. He's a smart guy. Was it? No, not Petraeus. What's the guy's name? Anyway, he's a smart guy. He was messaging his girlfriend. But they didn't send messages because they knew, you know, if you send an email, it goes through the public network. That's dangerous. So instead, he would compose a message and then save it in his, drafts. Have you ever done that? You start a message in Gmail or in any other service, and then you just save it in drafts. And then he gave his girlfriend the login to his email account. So the mail was never sent. His girlfriend would just log into his Gmail account, go into the drafts, and there's the message. Clever. He's the head of the CIA. Didn't work. General Petraeus was of course, busted. Totally because some other investigation was going on and they looked in his email and they said, well, what's this? So you shouldn't really anything. If you put it on the internet, it's probably safe to assume that it is treated as public. That way you won't be surprised and lose your job as head of the CIA. It's assume that it's public. Should you ever get to that, you know, vaunted position. Now, if he'd really wanted to protect himself, and you could do this too, there is a way to do it. But it's so complicated, nobody ever wants to do it. It's called encryption. And it's possible to encrypt a message on your computer, then send it through the public internet. No one who gets it can read it. Even the spies at the National Security Agency, they can't read it. Or if they can, it would take them 100 years to read it. And by then, you don't care. just encryption. And then the person on the other end, they have the key and they unlock it. In fact, there's a really good system. You know, this has been a system used since the time of Caesar. The Romans used cryptography. There was a problem, though, because in order to send an encrypted message, you had to send the key so that the other person could decrypt it, right? And so you might send two messengers and hope that the same person doesn't capture them or whatever. But now we have a better system. Works really well. It's called public key cryptography. It's trustworthy. It's effective. You have two keys. You have a key you can give anybody. But that key can only be used to scramble. It can't be used to unscramble. So, for instance, I put my public key on all the key servers in leoville.com, my personal blog, leoville.com. You can get it there. And then if you want to send me a scrambled message, you get my key, scramble it. You can't even unscramble it. You can only scramble. And then I keep close to my vest, I keep my private key, and that's what I use to unscramble it. It's very easy to do. There's a program for Windows, gpg4win.com. There's one for Mac, gpgtools.org. Simple. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, we have deduced there is another way of sending completely securely information between two people. If you're under 25 handwriting, it works. Because nobody handwrites anymore, do they? They only type. So I have a note from my intern. It's completely indecipherable. Is Spencer a doctor? Maybe he's a doctor. Somebody in our chat room pointed out that snail mail... Well, now there are federal laws protecting U.S. mail. You know, they can't just open that. They have to get a court order to open that and all that. But what they are doing, which I find quite interesting, is photographing the front and the back and saving it in case of future investigations. And if you should send a postcard, well, they're getting the message too, aren't they? So that's not illegal. And in fact, the federal government law enforcement mandates it. As the mail is going on the sorting machine, they photograph the front and the back. Turns out metadata, that's called metadata. It's not the content of the message, it's everything else. Who it's from, who it's to, you know, the date, the time, in the case of your smartphone, GPS coordinates. That's all called metadata. And of course, the federal government has been collecting that and saving it and storing it for some time now. In fact, that's one of the big debates is over metadata. In fact, President Obama just this week said, we're going to stop doing that, but we'll see. The proof is in the pudding. For a while, they were going to say, well, we won't do it. We'll make the phone company do it. But the thing that's scary about all of this is they're collecting everything. And then should a crime occur, it's like pre-crime. It's kind of like Minority Report. Should a crime occur, they can go back and look through all that stuff, and they've got it. That's kind of creepy. Plus, who's protecting the data? Who's keeping, you know, prying eyes from reading it? So if you really want to send stuff privately, there are ways to do it. And I think because of all the revelations about U.S. spying on, 22 foreign leaders? That's the latest that came out this week. Everybody's going to start using strong encryption. It's actually not complicated. There are text messaging programs like Text Secure, which is free on iOS and Android. Actually, it's not yet out on iOS. It will be soon. That encrypts it. So if you give me your public key or publish it in some form, I can then send you a private message that no one can read, and vice versa. Email. It's been solved, as I mentioned, GPG4, the number 4, win. I'll put this in the show notes, by the way, techguylabs.com. In fact, we'll do a whole article on how to communicate privately. Now, I should warn you, the NSA has said, well, if somebody starts using encryption, we're just going to save everything. It's a red flag. Really? Wanting to preserve my privacy is apparently a red flag. But the good news is we can trust the math. They can't crack it. We're fairly certain. No matter how big a computer they build, they can't crack it. So they're collecting it, but it's just garbage. I think if everybody used this encryption, you see, we wouldn't have to worry so much. But here's the point. Here's the point from our previous conversation. Assume it's public. They're taking pictures of your mail. They're saving all your metadata from your phone calls. they're apparently even reading your email. And if you're using the internet, it's all public. Consider it all public. You post a picture in Facebook that's published only to your friends. No. Assume it's public. And parents, tell your kids that, because I think kids think, oh, Snapchat, I'll Snapchat. Then nobody will see it in 30 seconds. It destructs. No, it doesn't, actually. You know where it's kept? On Snapchat servers, where the government can go get it. So, or an employee who's just kind of in a bad mood that day. So you really want to be secure. You send encrypted. But the most important message is, and probably most people, are, as long as they understand this, are fine. Everything else is public. As long as you don't care, just assume it is. Anything else is, I think, overly optimistic. How about that? 8888 ask Leo. We will put, I'll put a little tutorial. Josh, remind me to do that on the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com this week on how to do this for yourself. You need an email program that supports it. You need to download some special software. You'll create a key, actually a key pair, your public key that you can publish on the key servers and give out to everybody, and your private key that you hold on to tight. You don't let anybody have that. It's also password protected. You can, and you have a nice long password on that. I like to have like sentences. It can be really long. It's a good idea. And by doing that, you can send messages to somebody else who's also got a public key completely privately. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's see. Heather Hammond, you've been, while I've been gassing on, you've been collecting bright, interesting people for the show, have you not?
I had not heard that phrase before.
Gassing?
I had not.
You know, hot air, gas.
Yeah,
it's
I
the
mean,
same
I get
thing.
It. I, yeah, just, I'm just, I love it.
Yeah. You've never heard that?
I haven't. Well, not used.
I've got a lot of old man phrases I'm going to try out on you later.
And I beg to differ because you're a genius.
Mm-hmm.
So let's help Ken in Santa Monica, who, what the what?
What the what? Lost
administrative rights.
Uh-oh. That doesn't sound good. Hi, Ken. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Heather.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I'm listening to you back to the tech TV days.
Oh, thank you.
Big fan. First time I've ever called you.
Pick up the phone, Ken, because I'm getting a lot of... Room noise. Yeah, yes. I understand you put me on the speakerphone. You got to sit there for hours with the gas on and on.
There we go.
There we go. Sorry. Thank you, Ken. No problem.
Well, I've been, fooling with computers for an awful long time, and I've had this Acer netbook work fine for 2 years, Win 7, 64-bit. All of a sudden, I wanted to install a very legitimate program. And all of a sudden it pops up and says, you do not have administrative rights to do that.
Right on.
And I said, wait a minute. I thought, this is my computer. No one else has ever used it.
All right. Let me tell you, though, that's a good thing. You don't want administrative rights because a bad guy gets the same rights you get. So this is just like a little extra protection to make you think long and hard about what this thing is that you're going to install. And we've been saying lately that everybody, even if they're, of course, everybody running XP, but everybody running any version of Windows, Mac, Linux, you should not be running as administrator.
No. Uh-huh.
Because, in fact, what version of Windows is it?
Windows 7.
Okay. If you run as administrator, then and malware gets on your machine, it has the same permissions you do. And if you're administrator, it means everything. You can do anything it wants. If you run as a limited user or a standard user, then you have to give your password when you want to do things like install software. Apparently, you are running as a standard user. That's a good thing.
Right.
Because that made you pause and say, is this something? You still can do it. You type in the password and boom. But it made you pause, and that's what we want. Do I really want to install this? In fact, for instance, did you get this software from the original creator of the program?
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people go
and
to
I've
places.
I've written to him, and he just wrote back, well, you've got to get administrative rights then, I guess.
You have them. Just log in with your login. In most cases, that's the administrator. I'll talk a little bit about this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by RingCentral, my very fine phone system. Who talks about their phone system in their office? I love my phone system so much. Well, we do, but we have kind of a special deal here. So when we set up the studios, as I've told this story, stop me if you've heard it. told him many times. When we set up the studio, we were moving from the cottage, and it was a small operation. First, it was just me, and then it was me and a few other people. And we made everybody use their cell phone. If you want to make a phone call, use your phone. You got one. But, you know, you can't run a business that way. Eventually, you have to kind of have a phone system. And being me, that is cheap and dumb, I didn't know really what to do. I mean, probably most people, what they do is they go to the phone company. But that's not what you want to do. You go to the phone company. It's very expensive. They put a computer in your basement, a PBX, and, you know, it's inflexible. It's old-fashioned. Fortunately, I surrounded myself with smarter people than me. And Russell Tammany, our contract IT guy, he's from a company called Exponentia. He said, you know, you don't have to go to the phone company. You can get a cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. He said he installed this for a number of people. He was very happy with it. So we did it. I trust Russell. A couple of things I liked right off the bat. First of all, there's no setup fee. There's no PBX. There's no hardware at all. So there's no startup cost. It's under $25 a month per user. When we get a new employee, we just plug them in. It's easy. Plug in the phone, and it works. We have all these features that we can use from a web browser or from their smartphone apps. They have great smartphone apps. Things like, fax messages. You can fax from your email, receive a fax message in your inbox. Voicemail goes there. You could actually call from the app on your smartphone, and it appears that you're calling from our 800 number. And incoming calls can be redirected from your desk to your smartphone. They've got an auto receptionist that greets the callers. It's my voice. It's not like a magic voice. It's my voice. And announces employees and department extensions. The nice thing, though, about a cloud-based system is they can also add features. And they do all the time. For instance, they just added meetings. So now we can host face-to-face meetings. This is all part of the plan in high definition. We could share desktops, documents with anyone, anytime, on any device, even mobile. Meetings make RingCentral the single best business solution on the market today, and it just makes me happier that I did it. I get happy all the time about RingCentral. I think you're going to want to try it now. Obviously, it's not for a home, but if you're in a business, if you're a business owner, or you are the chooser, the IT person, or you know the one who is, tell them about RingCentral. We've got a 30-day risk-free trial. Go to ringcentral.com, use the promo code TWIT, or you can call. We have a number. It's actually a special number because it's so easy to set up numbers on RingCentral. 800-543-9980. That's the special TWIT number. 800-543-9980. And right now, when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones when you use our offer code. That's nice. Ringcentral.com, use the promo code TWIT. We have been very and continue to be very happy with it. I apologize to those of you who've heard this lecture before, but because, you know, a week from Tuesday, Microsoft will push out the last update to Windows XP. And a lot of people ask all the time, how do I run Windows XP safely? But the answer is very similar to how do I run any computer safely? And it starts by not being the super user, the root, the administrator, whatever you call it, the person with all the powers. Because when a malware gets on your system, and it's running on your system, it has the same power you do as your login. So you want to log in as a limited user. That's, I believe, Ken, that's why you got asked this. It asked for the administrator password. Now, you say, I don't know what that is.
Right.
This has never happened before?
I've had some things where I wanted to go to a folder or something, and it said you don't have administrative rights, and I went in to try to gain administrative rights. And I could never get anywhere.
Well, first thing is your login. When you got this netbook, it probably came with a user. You just used that user, or did, because normally it would ask you to create a new user. Did you get it brand new?
I got it brand new out of the box, and I became the user with my picture, but I never put a password in.
All right. So one thing to try is entering your name with no password. In other words, you probably are, because it's by default Windows. You know, this is a little bit of a flaw. Security is inconvenient by its nature. And so most of the time, companies err on the side of convenience. And that means in most cases, you set up your account on your new computer. You set it up as an administrator. So probably it's your login. So just hit return or your name and return. And that does not work?
No, because in the beginning, when I first got it, it used to come up with my picture and ask me to put a password in, and then I'd just hit the enter button and it would proceed.
Right.
Now, after a period of time, it forgets even doing that and just lets me open up the, you know, log on. I just open it.
Are you the only person using this? You're not messing with stuff, are you?
Nope, I'm the only person using it.
Because it is possible to turn off some of these things, like put you could turn on auto login so that it doesn't ask anymore. You only, you know, it'll just log you right in.
Yeah, I did that by itself after. After about, I did that with another computer too. After a period of about a month of me, you know, having that page come up where I hit enter, it stops. It just opens it up.
You don't take Ambien to sleep, do you?
No.
Okay. So, because somebody's setting this up, obviously, it doesn't do it by itself, usually. But okay. I think that there's a couple of solutions. First of all, on Windows 7, there is a hidden administrator account, and I'm going to put a it's a complicated thing to turn on, but you can turn that on. And once you do, then now you have an administrator account. There's you can also go into the user's account control panel and check and see, make a new user with administrator while you're logged in. It's also possible, somebody's suggesting in the chat room, and I, you know, it's so easy to say, you know, it's got to be malware. That's always the go-to. Oh, you got malware on there. I don't think malware could change those kinds of settings or would change those kinds of settings. So I'm less likely to and less inclined to say that. But I would, you want to go into your user accounts control panel and take a look at what's going on. You probably have Windows 7 Starter Edition, which is a very, you know, netbooks did not get the finest version of Windows available at the time. I'm wondering, somebody in the chat room, Carlos, says, this did happen to me. User accounts were all messed up. I had to reinstall Windows. Yikes.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. But what's happening now is not a bad thing, which is it wants an administrator password. That's actually the normal mode, or should be the normal mode of operation. But I'm a little concerned because you say, well, it never did that before, and there's some folders I can't access. That's a little nerve-wracking. Do you did you make – I may not even have asked for this because netbooks – this is one of the negatives of netbooks. They were so simple, so primitive. They probably didn't come with a restore disk. It probably didn't even ask you to make one.
No.
Yeah.
And the same thing has happened with my desktop HP Pavilion asking me for an administrator.
Really?
Yeah, my son is a computer programmer, came in, and he says, hey, Dad, I says, can you tell me what's going on? He says, you don't have administrative rights to the computer.
Yeah, he never messed with it before, did he?
No.
I'm really, this is, your son's baffled, as am I. This is none of this is supposed to happen. I'm not really sure what happened. You're sure your son didn't do you a favor and set this up?
No, I told him to keep his hands off my computer.
A wise man. Well,
no matter how smart you are and how much you know, please don't touch.
It bothers
computer.
Me that it's happened to two computers in your house. It's not. Doesn't this is not normal. And it's certainly, computers don't do this to themselves. That's what's puzzling me. It sounds like your son was trying to do you a favor. I don't know what to say. I think what we're going to do is we're going to put a link in the show notes to recovering. It's not on by default, but it's there, this hidden administrator account. And you can do this. And then once you do it, you will have an administrator account. Then the thing to do is give that account a good password, create a new user account, or take your existing user account, make that a limited user, a standard user. And use that day-to-day. And then when you need to install software or updates or change settings, you'll log in as the administrator to do that. Bert's given me a link in the show notes to a Microsoft support page. Maybe this will give us some information here. This is a knowledge base article. Sometimes Microsoft, how to change user password at command prompt. Nah, I don't. You can't do any of that unless you have an administrator account. I'm not sure what happened. The trick with this always is create or your a new administrator account first. I use the I, no, I did this for my mom. She used Windows 2000 for years. Never had a bug. Never had a problem. No malware. And it's because she never ran as an administrator. I gave her two accounts. I set her up an administrator account and a standard user account. I made the administrator password the reverse of, you know, backwards version of her password, so she didn't have to remember two passwords. When she needed it, she could. She could update her antivirus or install software by logging in as the administrator. It seems odd to me that your machine would do this by itself. And I have no clue as to why. And it's not in my experience, and I've not seen this, frankly, nor has anyone in the chat room seen anything like this. Makes me nervous. I think your son's helping you out. I really do. Randy in Dallas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again. We talked briefly yesterday. Got into a little bit of Atari 800 and Mule.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, we were disconnected. I don't know how, but I spent an hour on my AT&T dial-up, got in again, and then the show was over. But I've got blisters on me fingers, but that's okay. My main question, well, you couldn't kind of believe, and no one would believe, that I started with Windows 95A, and I've upgraded that same image all the way to XP. SP3, 32-bit, and that's what I'm on now, and I'm on a 15-year-old computer. Are you still with me?
Still here, yeah.
Okay, and I would like to do an in-place upgrade to my brand-new Asus gaming laptop, and I know in-place upgrade isn't supported by Microsoft. But there is a company...
I'm so sorry. We're out of time. There's the magic... No. Hang on. I can't help it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Randy, I have to apologize. But we have these are hard breaks. They're network breaks, and I cannot avoid them. So if you would, state your question, please, sir.
Okay, Leo, not a problem. I understand. What I want to do is do, I believe it's called an in-place upgrade from my XP Service Pack 3 32-bit to my brand new Asus 6 laptop, which is Windows 8.
You want to get the data from the old computer onto the new computer? Is that what you want to do?
Everything totally, because it's got my life since 1995.
Yeah, yeah. Be very, very careful here, because you don't want to copy. I think I answered this question yesterday. You don't want to copy everything. You only want to copy the data, those settings and all that stuff. I want you to enter that in by hand, because you don't want to bring a lot of junk. Microsoft has a desktop transfer wizard, but don't use it, because you don't want to bring junk over from that really old machine. You just want your data. Now, have you ever made a backup in your life?
Leo, I've got three backups of my laptop now. I've got three backups.
So restore one of those backups onto your new machine.
Actually, but Laplink makes a program called...
No.
Okay.
In fact, I'm amazed they're still in business.
How about the second possibility?
No, yes. You got a backup? That's what you should use. Now, you're not getting... I know you think I cut you off yesterday. I told you the exact same thing. Please listen to me. You do not want to copy anything but the data. Don't throw out the old computer. Keep it. If you've missed something and you need something, it's still there. You can get it. But for what you should right now should do is use that new Windows machine. You're going to love that fast, nice new Windows machine. Restore your backup. That's your data. If you've been backing up your data, that's your data. Nothing else. No lap link. Re-enter your settings by hand. That's all I can say about that. And I hope that solves the problem. But we're done, because I don't want to answer this a third time with the same answer. You know what you could use? In fact, this would be a good time to do a Carbonite commercial. So I'm going to do that. Thank you, Randy. Jim and Yorba Linda, I'm taking it. You don't want to buy a new car with that Dell.
Yes. I will say I've been a Carbonite user for years, and I love it. So that's the good news.
Yeah. Have you ever had to use it?
I've used it more just for convenience. I'm out of town. I want to look up a document on my cell phone because I'm talking to a client.
Exactly.
I can pull up the document, read it.
Is that nice?
And, you know, it's so neat. And also, I'm president, volunteer president of a local charity. They used to back up on just a little jump drive. And I got them on Carbonite because I'm fiscally responsible. You keep tax records for years and stuff. And I
didn't
trust them to do it.
That's right.
And now people in the office like it so much, they bought it for their own use.
Well, it sounds like you've done a lot for our sponsor, so thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
It's a quality product. You know, I could sell that product.
Thank you.
Anyways, I'm buying, you know, based on your advice, I've got XPs. I'm buying a new Dell tomorrow, and I just want to bounce a few things off for you. What antivirus do you recommend for a new computer?
Well, there's two answers to this. First of all, the antivirus is not the panacea to protect you. Because an antivirus can't protect you against yourself. It's going to let you install bad stuff on there, and it may not even catch it. So always think of the antivirus as a backstop, but you are the most important part for security. Having said that, you're going to get a Windows 8 machine which has an antivirus built in. Microsoft has finally started shipping Windows with an antivirus, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if you need to go out and get a third-party one. If you're careful... You follow the rules. You keep it up to date.
Yeah,
that's automatic. And you know Microsoft finally understands that, so that happens automatically unless you turn it off. And this is really important. Remember that caller. Don't run as administrator. Run as a standard user. So that just puts one little speed bump in front between you and bad guys.
Right.
You be very careful about the links you click. You know, frequently email will have what looks like a link to your bank, and it's not. Be careful about that. Be careful about where you get software.
A FedEx scam, and I also had one sent, an email sent from a friend that just didn't look like, hey, you should open it. It didn't sound like him. I called him. He said, my God, don't open that.
Yeah. So good. So you, and that's really the best antivirus is you being a little skeptical.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So I think you're in good shape. I don't think you need to buy anything extra for a Windows 8 machine.
Okay. They include McAfee. I'll just ignore that.
Yeah. I wish they wouldn't do that.
I know. I tried to, can you get rid of bloatware? They said no.
Microsoft for years has been trying to get people like Dell to do their signature PCs, which have none of that trialware on it. But the problem is this is the way Dell makes money because they don't make much money on the hardware anymore.
Okay. So I'm getting their 17-inch run touchscreen and stuff, backlit keyboard.
That's a very nice system. I like it.
I write reports, spreadsheets. I'm not a gamer. I'm 60-plus years old. I'm just watching an occasional movie, take it up to our cabin and stuff. I'm getting, 6 gigs of RAM and a 500-gig hard drive. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
An i5 processor.
Perfect.
1600 by 900 resolution.
Now, okay, that's a little low, especially for a 17-inch screen. Are you sure that's what it is? I'd like to see a 1080 screen, like 1280.
Okay,
1600 by 900.
Reading their quote.
1600 by 900.
1600 by 900.
Yeah, that gets that 16:9. It's a widescreen.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a less expensive computer, and one of the ways they save money is by putting a lower res screen. It may not bother you, but at a large screen size like that. That's such a low resolution.
Well, I told the guy I wanted, pretty good resolution, just like for movie watching.
Well,
like,
it's not.
You can't build Dells like you used to be able to order this and this. They come pre-built from China.
Especially laptops. The issue is, frankly, that's 720p high def, not 1080p. And so that's a little lower quality. It may not bother you. I mean, it depends on how you feel.
Well, I don't mind paying a couple hundred or something.
I'd see if you can get a higher res display. Yeah, go. Well, they offer it. It's not on the lowest cost laptops.
Okay.
So I'd shop around a little bit for a higher resolution display. That's one thing you're giving up. That's why. How much is it?
It's about $1,000 machine.
Wow. For a $1,000 machine, you should get a higher resolution.
Yeah. I want a touch screen. I want a backlit keyboard. So it's kind of limiting now. They're kind of pre-built things.
Oh, no, I know. And that's the way laptops are. You can't really customize them much because they have to be assembled.
And I'm getting Windows 8 because it is Windows 8.
Is it a touch? Is it a touch screen? Probably not.
Touch screen. It is.
It is. All right. Well, that's a surprisingly low resolution for something at that cost.
Okay. Okay. Well, I learned something. Also, it's got the 5400 RPM hard drive. Should I fight to get the 7200?
Well, it depends on battery life and how important that is to you.
I'm plugged in most of the time.
Yeah, I'd get a faster. In fact, I'd get an SSD if you can afford it. I mean, it depends how much money you want to spend.
Yeah, they don't. I asked. I got to go up to like a $2,000.
Yeah, you're at the lower end. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, 5400 is fine. It's just a little slower. It's not a lot slower. It's just a little slower.
It also says something like non-dedicated GPS on there.
GPU. What that is...
It's a non-dedicated GPS. I'm reading their quote.
I don't know what that is. I guess that's for location, handling the location.
Oh, it says no dedicated, not non.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have one. Yeah, I wouldn't expect it. That sounds fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I come to talk about peer-to-peer lending, my friends, and Prosper.com. Prosper is kind of a unique take on the loan business. No big bank. In fact, what Prosper does is they bring people with money, people who want to lend money, together with people who want to borrow money. And that's a great thing. It's kind of the latest thing in Silicon Valley. If you knew in 72 hours you'd have as much as $35,000 to cover your needs, what would you do? Would you pay off a high-rate credit card? Yeah. Maybe start a business. I think that's a good idea. Or just fix that bathroom or kitchen that's been driving you crazy. It's so easy. Go to Prosper.com. You'll fill out an easy online application, provide a few details, and you'll get a rate almost instantly. And by the way, that will not affect your credit score. Prosper offers low fixed rates, unsecured personal loans, no collateral is required, multi-year terms available. It's Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. With Prosper's innovative peer-to-peer lending process, there are no outrageous fees, rising interest rates, and you don't ever have to set a foot in a bank. I like that. You could do this in your jammies. Go to prosper.com/twit. Check your rate right now. It won't affect your credit score. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for our viewers. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days and receive a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com. Not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit prosper.com/twit. Prosper.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, help you buy computers, help you hack them, help you junk them. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside those regions, you know, just use Skype. Skype out, it'll call it, and it doesn't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Our website is techguylabs.com. I will put advice there as far as computers to buy. That's a good question people have. We were talking before the break with a caller who was concerned about a laptop he was about to buy. And it sounded like it was fine. It's from Dell. It's an Inspiron, around $1,000. I mentioned this yesterday. Most computer companies have two levels. They have a consumer level or consumer grade and a pro grade or business grade. And in most cases, if you can afford it, you want the business grade. It's made better. It'll have better components. You can see where Dell cut corners on this one, for instance. A slow 500-gigabyte hard drive. I know that sounds like an awful lot, and it probably is plenty. But that saves some money over an SSD. Most people would like a solid-state drive if they could afford one. It's a lot faster. They saved 6 gigs of RAM, I guess, is fine. It's not too little, that's for sure. Where they really cut corners was on the resolution of the screen. And a 17-inch screen at 1600 by 900 is kind of low res. I'd like to see a higher resolution screen for you, especially since you watch movies. But again, it's going to be, you know, it depends on how much you can spend. I would shop around. I wouldn't stop your shopping yet. Be nice to get a better resolution screen. Jim in San Diego is on the line. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I am in the process of cutting the cord with cable TV.
Oh boy!
And I've looked at Costco. They've got a really good HD antenna, and I'm in a good area to receive HD over the air.
The best quality high def TV is the free stuff you get over the air. It's better than anything you can get on satellite, cable, anywhere. So if you are within a range of the antennas of your local television stations, boy, that's a good choice, even if you didn't cut the cable.
Well, but what I would like to do is be able to have a PVR, a DVR, some way of recording content. And I don't know if I have to get an antenna that already has that ability.
No, the antenna is separate. And, you sounds like you've got a good choice for an antenna. There's a website called Antenna Web. I would also look at, you can enter in your zip code. It'll tell you what stations come in strong. There's another website. Every time I mention the name, I bring it down. AntennaWeb.org is run by the Consumer Electronics Association and the National Association of Broadcasters, and it's pretty reliable. But there's an even better one. Chat room, remind me of the name. There's an even better one that's got a weird name that will give you a lot of information about over-the-air television, what it could be like in your particular area. That's it. It's now. Don't go right now. Go later, because I'm going to bring it down as soon as I mention the name. TVFool.com. TVFool.com. Good place to go to. But probably they'll recommend the antenna that you already see there. DVRs, you're going to get a TiVo.
Okay.
Remember the TiVos?
Is there a particular model? Because I know there's all different types.
Well, I just bought a TiVo.
You don't have the cable.
Yeah. So TiVo always was designed for over the air. And then they made deals with Dish. They made deals with the cable companies to make versions of TiVo that work with the cable companies or with Dish. But you still can buy an over-the-air TiVo. A good place to go in your area is weakknees.com. 1K. WEAKNEES.com. They're a TiVo reseller. And they'll give you, I think, better than the TiVo website, a comparison of the different kinds of TiVos. They also upgrade the TiVos. They put better, bigger hard drives in if you should want one. I bought the Romeo. In fact, I bought the Romeo Pro, which is the highest-end TiVo. It has some nice features that I wanted. For instance, it supports using your Wi-Fi, or actually your network, to distribute the television throughout the house. It has a built-in sling box. It has six tuners, which is kind of cool. So you can get six different recordings at the same time.
That's a TiVo Romeo?
That's the top-of-the-line TiVo. But if you go to Weak Knees, you'll see there's a variety of different ones. The top-of-the-line TiVo Romeo is expensive. It's about $600, plus you have to buy the subscription. But you get a lot of hours of recording. I think 150 hours of recording. Base model Romeo works for over-the-air. Maybe that's what he has to get. That might be that you have limitations. You want one that will work with an antenna. And they'll say specifically, actually, you're right, the Romeo Pro does not work with an antenna, only the base model Romeo. So you're going to look at a Romeo Series 5 TiVo. And,
okay.
Because that has the antenna capability. It's the only TiVo that works over the air.
Yeah, I've only had a DVR through my cable provider.
Oh, you're going to love TiVo. It's so much better.
I'm looking forward to it.
You know, the cable company DVRs are terrible, but we have to, we all have to live with them. But if you ever used a TiVo, oh man, the software was so elegant. And by the way, these come with Netflix and all of the network stuff too. You'll want to connect it directly to the net as well as to your antenna.
Well, I've got the Roku. How would that fit in? I've got the Roku 3.
You could use that instead. You know what you'll find is, and this, everybody has this situation, a modern TV, a modern Blu-ray player, the Roku, the Apple TV, and your TiVo all have Netflix. Every one of them. Mm-hmm. So you just pick the one that you like the interface of the best. That's all. Because oddly enough, the software is a little different on all of them. People who use, I just bought my TiVo. It hasn't arrived yet. People who use the TiVo tell me that it has the best Netflix interface, but I think that's a matter of taste. You'll just use what you want. You probably don't need the Roku with the TiVo.
Oh, okay. So they're interchangeable.
Well, there's a mix, right? Some of the stuff Roku gets, you can't get on the TiVo and vice versa.
Well, but you cannot record with a Roku, though.
Right. You need the TiVo. So if you want to record over the air, this is the way to do it.
Okay.
I think in some ways you're lucky. And now remember, you do have to pay a subscription to the TiVo, so you're not eliminating your monthly fee. But that's how they get
how much is that about?
Well, it varies. You can get a one-time only lifetime subscription for I think $500 or $15 a month if you want to pay by the month. Okay. Lifetime is the lifetime of that device, not your lifetime. Let's be clear. So you have to figure it out. At $500 or $15 a month, it pays for itself in 2 years.
And it's weak knees, 1K, correct?
Yeah. I really like them. You know, you can get it on Amazon and other places. Look at weak knees. They do charge full retail, so you probably can shop around and save $50. But I like these guys. And one thing they do that no one else does, they'll upgrade the hard drive. They'll put a bigger hard drive in. So if you do know you want to record a lot, weak knees is – and they're great. They do great service and support. I've known these guys for years. One of my books was a TiVo book way back in the Series 1 days, and they helped me write the book. They're very smart guys.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, I've been suffering with this horrible Comcast DVR for years and years, and I remember dimly there was this thing called TiVo, and I was talking to Jason Snell over at Macworld Magazine. He said, oh yeah, TiVo's still around. I love it. I can't wait. I ran to the store. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
88, ask Leo. The chat room saying, can I see Heather, please, just for a moment? There she is. Heather Hammon.
Why?
Well, because she's wearing her princess outfit.
That was an hour ago.
Oh, you've already had a costume change? She's one of the few people who does regular costume changes.
During the show.
Yeah, Carol Channing used to do that. I saw her at the classic Fairmont Venetian room. Remember that?
Awesome.
The supper club. Saw her perform there. Must have been 25, 30 years ago.
Is that still there?
I don't know. That was a long time ago. I used to go to...
It's a sexy place.
It's a what?
It's sexy.
Sexy.
It's dark and there's candles on the table. And
yeah, I brought a date there once and it turned out she'd been there the night before with another guy.
Oh, my.
She didn't tell me. I was all excited. I said, we're going to see James Brown. It's really exciting.
And the performer said, hey, lady.
Yeah.
Really?
James goes, hey, you're back. Hope you enjoy the show. Good God.
No way.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Oh, and then bullets of sweat started raining down from your forehead.
Yeah. So I've lost my... But I used to go, because I worked at the local radio station in San Francisco, and I would go every opening night and interview the headliner. It was great. And I remember Carol Channing, she had, like you, she had like 20 costume changes in the course of an hour and a half show.
Okay, stay tuned. I might wear a boa next.
Hey, on the line right now from beautiful... Wait a minute. He was there a second ago. Tübingen, Germany. It is Chris Marquardt, who has removed all of his hair.
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's just got it tied behind his head.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's cute, too. It's nice to have options.
You look just like the guy in Kraftwerk. Florian, Rolf, I can't remember which. Hey, how are you, Chris? Chris is our photo expert, joins us each and every week to talk about digital photography. Snuck up on me this week. I forgot to mention you were going to be here. I'm so glad you are.
Oh, always happy to be here.
Are you prepared to do some photographic myth-busting?
Absolutely. I have a myth for you. That is, rules are there to be followed.
Well, that's why we call them rules, Chris.
Yeah, but there are so many in photography. And what I thought I would do is I picked five different rules.
Okay.
And two of them I break often. Two of them I usually follow and one I always follow.
All right. So I am going to try to identify which is which. As you state the rules, I shall tell you if this is an important one, not so important, or something you should just break all the time.
All right. First one is the sun... Has to be in your back, always.
Now, I know from previous episodes, that's not true.
Yeah, it isn't.
Because just J.J. Abrams alone tells us that solar flares are a good thing.
Well, it's not just the flares. It's the way the light shapes an object in front of the
silhouettes.
Camera. When the light comes from behind, yeah. you get nice light on the shoulders and on the hair. I have a light source kind of behind me and above me, and you see like a little reflection on my hair.
Yeah.
So
that's actually a lot of reflection. Is that is that Brill cream? What is that?
No, not really.
Butch wax?
It's just tightly tied back. Okay. You know? It's finally long enough so I can do that.
So lens flares, silhouettes, there are lots of reasons why you might emit the light in front of you instead of behind you.
Yes. So that's when I break fairly often. Yeah, sometimes it's okay to have like lots of light directly onto your subject, but usually it's better if the light is somewhere on the side or comes from behind. It gives a more interesting look.
Excellent.
Okay, second rule.
Yes.
No limbs severed.
I think that's an absolute written in stone rule. I break it frequently. I'll take a picture and I'll realize, oh my goodness, I cut them off at the knees.
I don't always follow that. So that's one I usually follow. I try to be cautious. I mean, if you cut higher up, like between the knee and the hip, that is totally fine. But below the knee, below the elbow,
it looks weird.
Looks weird. So that's one I usually follow.
Okay.
The rule of thirds.
Now, I like the rule of thirds, although I think it's misnamed because you really want the golden mean. But the idea is you divide the area of a picture up into areas of interest, and they tend to be on the intersections of the thirds. And I like it, but I think you could break that one.
It's actually one I break fairly often.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the composition leads itself to that thirdish kind of thing. By the way, the rule of thirds and the golden mean, they're fairly similar. They are almost the same thing. So you could almost interchange those. And I break those often because if you do this all the time, the pictures start getting kind of all the same, right? They look all the same. So it can turn into a boring thing after a while. So rule of thirds. Okay, here's one. No lines in the background, continue lines in the foreground.
No.
Does that make sense?
I've never heard this one before. No lines. What?
Yep. So it's what I usually follow. If you have lines in the background, behind your subject, and those lines in some way continue lines in the foreground, like in your subject, for example, you have a horizon and it goes right through your eye line, that will look funny.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's like
the Steve Martin arrow through the head. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If you have a lamp pole continuing the line of your arm, like sticking out of the top of your shoulder.
Yeah. No, nothing should go through your head, your eyes, your arms. That looks weird.
Well, it can look weird. So
it's one of those things that you don't see when you're taking the picture, but then once you see it, you can never unsee it. Like it's always that lamp coming up out of Uncle Charlie's head will always be there. For all eternity. So don't do that.
Antlers, like trees make wonderful antlers.
Yeah, exactly.
So be careful there.
Yeah. So that's a pretty much always follow.
That's an I usually follow. Sometimes you can use this for effect, but then it's usually a comical effect, and that's why I tend to avoid them. Unless I want to do a comical photo. And then here's one that I pretty much always follow, and that is pretty much that supersedes all the other rules, and I trust my gut. If it feels right, there's no reason not to do it.
Right. Break all the rules.
If any of the rules is broken and it still feels good, or sometimes that's the only thing that makes it work, then, hey, that's what I do.
Because you're a professional. You're a trained professional, Chris Marquardt. You know what you're doing. Those rules are here to protect you from me and my bad images.
No, your images aren't bad, but it's really one of those things where you over time you will learn and you will make mistakes but trusting your gut in general is a good idea.
It's a good idea to also break the rules so you can see why they're rules. Have some antlers coming out of Uncle Charlie's head just to see what that looks like.
You know, if you don't like Uncle Charlie and if you want to put this picture up on Facebook, hey, why not? Make him look funny.
Chris Marquardt has a great series of books. There's, of course, the Discover Lightroom videos at discoverlightroom.com where you can get Chris's workshops kind of on video so you can watch them
Can I slip in one URL? Yeah. tfttf.com/poster. tfttf.com/poster. I'm doing a little poster campaign of one of the pictures of Iceland, and it's only up for another 10 days. So if anyone wants to have a look, it's this one picture that really stood out for me. It's a big, big, huge cloud over Reykjavik and some rain falling there. And it's kind of quite dramatic looking.
Oh, that's cool.
So I made this into a little poster and it ships internationally and in the US.
Oh, I love this. That's a beautiful... we saw that image the other day. So it's $20 if you want a poster in the United States, $30 internationally. And it's the Tips from the Top Floor site, tftf.com/poster. Thank you, Chris Marquardt.
Thank you, Liam.
Good suggestion. We should get a green screen for Heather, and we could have her floating over an angelic background.
Oh my God! I'll like be you're like an the angel.
Yeah, fly. Like the goat simulator, like an angel just flying through the air. This is the chat room's idea. I think that's a good idea.
I think they're torturing me because of something that happened earlier.
Oh, really?
Don't you think so?
No, they love you. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger back from Africa. Did you wear that on safari?
No.
Your princess outfit?
No. I did bring one nice thing, but everything else stayed home.
Well, I'm just glad you dressed for the show. It gives kind of puts pressure on me, however. Dave is on the line, Bellflower, California.
Good afternoon, Leo. It's a pleasure.
Nice to talk to you, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I have a security question regarding online access to bank accounts, stockbroker, retirement accounts. Which offers more protection, having a really good password or never even setting up electronic access in the first place?
Well, first of all, if you get ripped off, almost always you're not liable, right? Or you're liable for a very limited amount in most cases. Nobody's going to drain your bank account. You're all right there. The convenience of online banking to me trumps the fact that you do give up a little security. So the answer to your question would be absolutely, it is less secure to do it online than to go into a bank. Or to use an ATM. It is less secure because you're doing it over the public internet. However, lots of safeguards have been put in place, and I think it's the convenience of online banking. I have an online broker. Is to me, makes it all worthwhile. And, you know, let's say you have a broker. You call the broker on the phone. You place an order. That can be hacked, too. A bad guy can hack by something called social engineering. In fact, it's much more common than computer hacking. He call and poses as you, right?
So, well, that's scary because I do trades occasionally on the telephone.
Right. Now, presumably the broker asks you some identifying information, mother's maiden name or something like that. Well, we all know at this point, thanks to the internet, things like mother's maiden name is not a very obscure identifying factor. The last four of your socials, probably not very good either. But a lot of companies use that. And at least half the time, probably more, hacks actually occur via that's what we call social engineering, that kind of tricky thing that hackers are very good at, calling and posing and talking. You know why? People want to be nice. People want to be helpful. And if somebody calls and they're a good actor and they call and say, oh, gosh, I forgot my account number, but here's my home address. Here's a credit card number that you have on file. Can you just give me that information? Can you give me that password? We've seen it happen time and time again. In fact, a friend of mine who is a writer for Wired magazine, Matt Honan, had his entire digital life stolen exactly that way, through a series of social engineering hacks. It started with Amazon. The hacker called Amazon, then used the information they got from Amazon to call Apple, used the information they got from Apple to hack Twitter. And it was all because they wanted his three-letter Twitter handle, M-A-T. And these guys are kids. They're teenagers, and they thought that would be pretty cool to have a three-letter Twitter handle. But as a result, his computer was erased, his phone was erased, his systems were compromised, all because he had a three-letter Twitter handle. And it was all done over the phone.
So, makes me nervous.
Well, I don't say that to make you nervous. So I say that so that you'll be prudent. So here's a few things you can do to be more secure. First of all, I do bank online. I use a brokerage. I use several online brokerages. And one of the things I suggest, and most of them will offer if they don't demand that they do, is second factor or two-factor authentication. You know how your bank, you can log in with your username and your password, and then it says, okay, now we're going to send a text to the phone number on record with a 6-digit code. Please enter that code and we'll let you in. You know that?
Yes.
Excellent. That's extraordinarily hard to hack because it's two factors. It's something you know, your password, and something you have, your phone. That bad guy would have to have both. Unlikely.
Okay, you're making me feel better. Thank you.
Yeah. Always make sure that you're using a secure connection, HTTPS. That means it's scrambled from your computer to the bank's computer or the broker's computer. Any reliable online commerce, bank, or financial institution will be using that automatically. But that's almost always a given. If they're not, don't use them. They're dumb.
Okay.
And then one more thing I'm going to give you that's really important. A lot of times the identifying information they ask for is a secret question. What high school did you graduate from? What was your high school mascot? What was the name of your first sweetheart? What was the city you honeymooned in? You know, you choose a secret question. Don't use real answers. Because, especially for people like me, Paris Hilton's phone got hacked because she used her dog's name as her answer to her secret question. Well, guess what? Anybody who's ever seen her on TV knows the name of her dog. Stupid. So make them up. Now, that means you're going to have to write it down somewhere. That's fine. You know, record it. But when they asked me, what is your high school mascot, I said the wombat. Now, no one would know that because it wasn't. But if somebody researched me and they figured out what high school I went to and they knew, oh, I went to Santa Cruz High, that's the Cardinals, then that wouldn't be a very good secret question. And most of the time, these secret questions are easy to guess or easy to figure out because that's the whole point, is to make it easy for you to recover your password. So don't fall for that. Make up answers. The last thing I would suggest is use a password manager because you want a unique, long, strong password for each site. Never duplicate. Everybody does it. Don't. And don't use a password that's a dictionary word. Let the password manager generate a completely random password. The more random a password is, the harder it is to guess. So I use a program called LastPass, but there are a great many of them. 1Password people like. There's an open source one called KeePass, but LastPass is my favorite. LastPass.com. It's $1 a month for the premium plan. Works on your smartphone, works on your tablet, works on your computer, Windows, Mac. And you let it store the passwords. You use a good password for it. It's the only one you have to remember. And it has a secure notes area, so you can put in the secure notes area the bogus answers to the secret questions.
Awesome advice. Thank you.
So, yeah, you're welcome. I mean, I love the convenience of online banking, online brokerage. And frankly, I think in some ways it's better. It's harder to hack if you do it right than it is for somebody to call up the broker and say, yeah, this is Dave. I forgot my password. I know my mother's maiden name. Will that help? Hackers are sneaky little sons of guns. But if you use these techniques, I think you're going to be in good shape. So if it has second-factor authentication, and more sites are doing this. Facebook does it. Twitter does it. Google started it. Now everybody's following along in their footsteps. Tumblr just started doing it. Turn them on. There's a little program that's safe and easy to use for your smartphone and your tablet called Google Authenticator. In some cases, they'll use that. Google, for instance, uses that. So they don't send you a text. You just run this little program, and it has a secret code in there, and you need to enter that code. Maybe you've seen in the James Bond movies and stuff, they'll carry a key fob that generates a 6-digit number, new one every 30 seconds. It's the same idea. VeriSign makes those. Those are great because you'd have to have that physical card or the smartphone in addition to the password. And having both is unlikely. Biggest problem most people have is they use the same password on a variety of sites. And the risk there is let's say you used a password on Twitter and your Twitter account got hacked. And now you also had used it on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. Now they've got all of them. Because everybody can guess your email. So different password for every site. And it shouldn't be your kid's birthday, your initials, your dog's name. It should be a random collection of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation. Yeah. Heather. Yep. LastPass will help you with that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's what you hope for. Somebody goes, is that the new? You got the new. Is that the new? Yeah, that's the new. Can I show you? And then you can't demo it at all. Wait, has it ever happened to you? Oh, you have the new iPad, don't you? How's it work? Well, it's great. Let me just, I can't unlock it.
Is that the new one?
Yes, thank you, John. It's the new HTC One.
The new one.
It's the one. It's the new one.
That's the new one.
You only get that for like the first 3 days, and then everybody has it. So you really have to enjoy it. Yeah, this is the. I was talking about this yesterday. Don't show Kim Schaefer because she has the old one. This is the new one. And I was just trying to play with the camera thing because, you know, it does this weird, does all these really interesting things with the camera. And I couldn't get it to do a single one of them.
Mm.
Oh.
Darn.
Oh.
But you got Burst, right? Where it takes.
Burst is cool. It could
once.
Take as many as 12 frames a second.
That's how you get cool GIFs, right?
Yeah. If you then upload it to Google, they'll auto awesome it.
Woody woo.
Woody woo hoo hoo. Do you use Google Plus? Because I've seen some of your images there.
Yeah, I like to, whatever. I use
Facebook. I'm a little disillusioned with Facebook for a few reasons. Lately, well, first of all, they squunch up the picture badly. They really compress it. So the quality goes way down. And Google Plus doesn't do that. But the other thing that's happened lately, and boy, brands are upset, is they keep messing with, they call it the algorithm, the rules that they use to decide what's in your news feed. Perhaps you assumed that when you look at your news feed on Facebook, well, that's just everything from the people I follow. No. Oh, no, it isn't. It isn't. They pick and choose. And brands are upset because it is a complicated algorithm, which nobody understands. And brands spend a lot of time and money getting a million likes for, let's say, Coca-Cola, with the hope and the thought that the people who liked Coca-Cola on Facebook would then see everything Coca-Cola posted on Facebook, right? That's what you would think. No. And in fact, you're seeing less and less of it because Facebook's decided it wants to be more like a news site. And they want higher quality posts. So all the brands that came to Facebook thinking, oh, this is great. You know, I'm Miley Cyrus, and I'm going to get a lot of likes. She probably has millions of likes right on Facebook. And then when I post something on Facebook, all the people who like me will see it. Kind of like, that's how Twitter works. Everybody who follows me on Twitter, about 500,000 people, if I tweet, they'll see it. It's not how it works on Facebook. Only a small percentage of the things that you post on Facebook are seen by the people who are your friends. And I think that it's really, it's not, is it what you're looking for with Facebook? It turns out, I just saw a study by the Pew Foundation. It's a very credible nonprofit that about 30% of Americans get their news from Facebook. So that's, I guess, why Facebook's doing it. They want to become a trusted source. But I think most people who use Facebook just want to see what Aunt Matilda and Uncle Maud are up to, and if Uncle Maud's still wearing the dresses. And, you know, this is the stuff they want to see on the Facebook page. And it's a little disappointing, right?
Yes.
Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right.
I follow you, Heather. I wanted to see all your Africa pictures. The only way I can do that is by going to your Facebook page directly, and then I'll see them.
Right. I feel like I have to go to the people I like, because otherwise I get that woman that complains about her goiter or whatever, and then somebody else is like, oh, my vacuum
that's Uncle
cleaner
Maud.
Broke.
He never...
Like, really?
I keep telling him, iodized salt. But no, he won't listen.
And then somebody's like, oh, I passed my smog test. I'm like, oh, my God, high five. Are you kidding? Why?
Why am I seeing
this?
I don't want to know that.
Oh, mind blown. Yeah, I go back less and less.
Here's
people,
a picture of a...
game.
A unicorn photobombing a reporter. Okay, whatever. Then you get an ad. That's the second post always is an ad for something I didn't like.
For the
like.
Same thing over and over again. Yeah, yeah, that you scroll past.
Then something from a basement. Then a picture of a squirrel eating in a diner. Okay. Then something I don't even know.
It's the decline of Western civilization.
I get depressed when I go to Facebook.
Thank you.
Is this what my friends are doing? Is this?
No.
Because it's kind of dumb.
You go, I thought I had exciting friends, but I guess not.
Yeah. Wow. Here's another ad.
What is that?
They're putting more ads in there. I don't know what it is. It looks like it says free design mini course. I don't want a free design mini course. And then, you know, it's just weird stuff. I don't. Anyway. I got into this because I was going to tell you about my new phone, but now I don't have time. So never mind. We're going to take a call in a second. Bob's on the line from Pottsville, PA. He has an old version of Office. How old is it? Really old. And he wants to know, is this safe to use? Bob in Pottsville, PA, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
How you doing, Leo? Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Well, listen, I am quite fond of my Office 2003, and until you recently mentioned it, I hadn't thought about it as being a 10-year-old program.
Yeah, hard to believe. You know, let's face it. Has there anything happened in the last 10 years that would change the way we think of a word processor, a spreadsheet?
No. No.
There's no magic new function somebody invented?
No. And I do not like the ribbon that's associated with 2007 and beyond.
Right. Well, you're going to stick with 2003.
Yeah, and that gives rise to my question, because while you've been beating the drum for the expiration of support for XP, I've noted that that is also the end of life is coming up for Office 2003 on the same day.
Same day. That's it.
And I'm wondering if I still continue to use my Office 2003 components offline, if there's any risk to my computer in doing so.
You know, it's ironic that you should ask this, because this week there was a zero-day flaw with Office.
Oh, okay.
Do you ever use RTF files? You know what RTF files
yes.
are?
Yeah.
I've recommended them for years. They're kind of the common file format that all word processors can read. It was created by Microsoft. It's not the native format. Usually you save Word files as a doc file. But if you want to send it to somebody, you'll often save it as an RTF because almost anybody can read it.
Yep.
Turns out the RTF rendering engine in Office is broken, and bad guys have been taking advantage of this by putting malicious RTFs up on the web. You can go to a website, it'll actually automatically launch in some cases, and your machine will be hacked.
Mm.
So, does this affect Office 2003? You bet. It goes all the way back to 2003 and all the way up to the most recent versions of Office. Is there a fix? Yes, there is. So, you definitely want to update Office now.
Sure.
But the next time that happens, there won't be a fix.
Okay.
So what you're going to have to do is pay attention. Do you now? You might say, "Well, I don't surf the web with Microsoft Word." No, you don't. But if Word's on your system, that means that the Word rendering engine is on your system. And if there's another flaw in RTF, let's say, or Doc, or XLS, or any of the file formats, if you go to a website with Internet Explorer, often Internet Explorer, when it sees that file extension, it'll just launch it. It'll say, "Oh yeah, I know how to read that. Let me just get Word. Come here, Word. Hey." Can you read that page for me? And Word say, yes, I certainly can. And boom, you're hacked.
Yeah.
So there won't be fixes going forward. So, yes, you are subject to the same thing. You got to be careful. Here's the most important thing you can do. Turn off that feature that automatically launches any browser plugin. And use Chrome, not IE. And I think you'll be fine. Otherwise, keep using it. It's a good word processor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, get me my snack box. It's snack time. I love this time of the day. Have you ever had a nature box? Have you ever had one?
Yes.
Aren't they awesome?
You sent me home with those peppered pistachios last night.
Oh, you loved those, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, then I don't have to tell you. Naturebox.com/twit. What is it? It is a snack system.
Designed
with your body in mind. Designed by a nutritionist. It's delicious snacks. Look, and every month the Nature Box arrives. Look at that. There it is. It came. My new Nature Box is here. This is so exciting.
Angels from on high, bring it down.
They have 3, 6, and 12 month subscriptions. Let me just open up the Nature Box. Oh, somebody's been in my Nature Box.
Burke.
So what you get is you get snacks. And you get snacks with no high fructose corn syrup. We know those are bad. No zero trans fats. You see, it's all nutritionist approved. Peppery chickpeas. You like the peppery pistachios? You'll love the peppery chickpeas. How about smoky barbecue peas? You know, sour cream and onion. This is my favorite. Sour cream and onion almonds are so good. And almonds are good for you. And look at this. Is no HFCs, all of them. No partially hydrogenated oils, artificial sweeteners, flavors, or colors. No trans fats. Nutritionist approved. This is a quarter cup, 4 per container, 160 calories, 4 grams of fiber. Just and you know almonds are just loaded with good stuff for you. Plus, they tastes good with sour cream and onion. Lemon pucker pistachios. Ooh. Now, here's the deal. If you go, these are good. Italian bistro pretzels. Those. Now, maybe you're, you know, I just want some dried fruit. Here's some Fuji apples. Delicious. Now, you can't, oh, they saved the best for last. These are, I'm going to give you these. Praline pumpkin seeds. Oh, they're abbondanza. Or something. Some Italian word that means really delicious. So here's the deal. If you go to naturebox.com/tweet, you'll get 50% off your first box. That makes it really easy to try. You can get an assortment, you know, just a random assortment. But, whoa. Well, we had some praline sunflower seeds. Okay, when you these bags, just a tip to our staff, you could just go like this and they're sealed. Just remember when you steal my Nature Box, to seal them up again, that you can say, I want spicy, I want sweet, I want savory. You can choose the flavors. You can even say, I'm vegan, no gluten, no, you know, I want it to be gluten-free. You could say, you know, you have a variety of choices on there, you know, dietary choices and so forth. This is a portion of the ad where I start eating. NatureBox.com/twit. Delicious. You're going to love it. I hear the magic music. It tells us it's time for hour number three of the Tech Guy program. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy, and I have been for, gosh, an awful long time. Started to, well, this show, the Tech Guy show, goes back to 2004, but that's nothing. That's nothing. That's just when I became, when I got the official title, Tech Guy. For 10 years before that, more, 12 years before that, I've been answering questions on the radio and on the TV about technology, and I'm glad to help you out here. Have a little experience with this stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you'd like to get a little hand-holding. We used to call it the Information Superhighway. Remember that? The Infobahn. Fortunately, we don't call it that anymore. In fact, we don't really need to call it anything. It's kind of just there, isn't it? Now you say Instagram or Twitter, and you don't need to say Twitter on the internet. Oh, they have the internet on computers now? Wow, that's cool. I can't wait to tweet. Did you see Barbara Walters' first tweet?
No.
Just a little tip.
Uh-oh.
Little tip, public figures. If you're just getting into Twitter now, you know, you were the person who said, that Twitter, it'll never last, or I just don't understand Twitter, or, you know, if you're just getting into Twitter now, don't say, hey, here I am.
Oh.
What's this all about? We've been doing this for a while now.
So, here, you know, I am, world, in the Twitter sphere.
Here I am. You hey. Can. Twitter is telling people what their first tweets were, you know.
Yeah.
Did you see what? Have you checked what your first tweet is?
No.
Shall I? Do you tweet?
Don't.
If you go, now you know I'm gonna. Now you know I'm gonna
oh,
do
no.
that.
I need to go hide it.
Discover.twitter.com/first-tweet. So here's mine. But you know, this isn't even my first tweet. Twitter thinks it is. My first tweet was November 8th, 2007. But I actually had joined, and my first tweet was, if you didn't know the history, a little cryptic. I surrendered Twitter, you win. But that was because I had quit Twitter many months earlier. I started using Twitter in late 2006. And I realized, you know, I have a company called Twit. It's been around for longer than Twitter. But I thought, if I spend a lot of time tweeting on Twitter about Twit, that could confuse people. That could be a source of confusion. And so I thought, for copyright reasons, I probably shouldn't, this new thing called Twitter, I'll stay away from that. I don't want people to get confused about my company, Twit, which stands for This Week in Tech, and Twitter, which stands for nothing. I remember I talked to the founder of Twitter. I said, Ev, didn't you know about, you know, Twit when you named it Twitter? Didn't, weren't you, were, he said, we knew about Twit, but we didn't think either of us was going anywhere. It's a big deal. Well, it was half right. Twitter did turn out to be something. So I quit. But then I was convinced by a number of my friends, Justine, for instance, Justine Azarek. She said, Leo, you got to be on Twitter. That's where it's all happening. So my first tweet was really my return tweet. I surrender Twitter. You win. And, you know, for a while, did you know this? Here's a little fun fact. This is how long I've been doing this. For many months, I was the number one person on Twitter, the most followed person on Twitter.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was in a race with a guy named Kevin Rose, who worked with me. He had a TV show on the cable. And he's now at Google. He's a venture capitalist, very wealthy fellow. I started Dig. And he and I were in a race to see who would have the most followers. And I was beating him, and then he caught up with me. But I got my revenge, because then a guy named Ashton Kutcher came on Twitter.
Who?
Who? That's what I said. Ah, he's a has-been. Till he got to 1 million followers. And this shows you how long ago this was. When I was number one on Twitter, that had the most followers on Twitter, I had, take a guess, how many followers I had?
Oh, wow.
5,000 followers.
Was gosh.
Was enough to be number one.
Oh, my gosh. Was that, Grandpa? Yeah,
I remember Twitter where there were only thousands of us.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, crazy, there you amazing. Go. Who's number one now? Is it Katy Perry, Justin Bieber? I think Katy Perry's number one. I wonder what her first tweet was.
Hey, Twitter, I'm here.
Her poor first Barbara. Tweet was 2009. Just got into Berlin. Feeling better, thank you. Have my Vicks inhaler by my bedside. And P.S., I Twitter. Gah, such a follower. And 4 years later, Katy Perry, she's got 550. What? That can't be right. 51 million followers. What?
She could be president.
Okay, I got to tell you just the dirty little secret of Twitter. Whether you got 5 followers or 51 million, usually more than half are bots. They're not real people. Spam bots. 51.9 million, and I thought I was something. I thought I was cool with 5,000. Wow. Your first tweet? What was it? Or maybe you're not on Twitter yet. You know, this is a problem. Twitter just went public. They raised a lot of money in the stock market, made everybody at Twitter rich. I think there were 100 new millionaires minted at Twitter at the company. But there's a problem. The trouble in paradise. Twitter growth is slowing rapidly. There's only about 250,000 people use Twitter. Did I say million? That's from my day. 250,000, 250 million people. Even the Pope tweets. Even the President tweets. Even Katy Perry tweets. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Let's go to Mario in El Paso, Texas. Hey, Mario. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo, the tech guy. How are you?
That's me. I am the tech guy.
Hey.
That seems kind of egotistical. There are many tech guys.
No, you are the original.
The original. Okay, I'll take that. I'm the old tech guy.
Yeah.
What can I do for you, Mario?
Yes, before my question, Leo, just a clarification. I'm not going to do what I'm going to ask, okay? But it's just a curiosity about how the IPC configuration works, that kind of stuff. So let me see now. I have a laptop. As you know, I live in El Paso, Texas, just across the border with Mexico, Ciudad Juarez.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I go to a website that's illegal, let's say LimeWire, and download songs, movies illegally, quite sure I'll be catched one day by the authorities. Yeah.
Well, it's no, actually.
No, actually. Well, but wait. Yeah. Okay. Now, why not? If I download a lot of illegal songs, I don't pay anything. That's illegal.
Yeah. Well, here's what happens. You might get, quote, caught, but it won't be by the authorities. Here's what happens. When you're on the internet, really, you identify to LimeWire and to everyone along the way as a number.
Right.
Not as a name. It doesn't say, this is Mario. It's just a number. It's an IP address or internet protocol address, 192.168.1.1 or whatever it is. That number is associated with your network, with your computer, but the only one who knows that is your internet service provider. No one else knows that. So what happens is if let's say the record industry, which has a very active anti-piracy division, movie industry too, what they're doing is they're scouring the internet. They make fake accounts. A lot of times what they do with BitTorrent is they make fake torrents. These are fake pirated movies. And then with BitTorrent, you can see who's downloading it. So then they get a sheaf of numbers. And if they want to pursue this, the first thing they'll do is they'll send an email to your internet service provider saying, hey, they don't say Mario because they don't know. They say 192.168.1.1 has been caught downloading stuff. In the United States, internet service providers have agreed to something called the six strikes rule. Not all of them, but many of them have agreed. The first time, you'll get a little notice, a little warning. The second time, another little warning. And it escalates bit by bit. Pretty soon, they're going to give you a link to an educational video you should watch. And eventually, after six strikes, they might cut you off. But no lawmen will arrive at your door. We'll talk a little more about this in a sec. What? No, turn that down. What? Leo Laporte. I'd like to dedicate this to my teenage son. 8888-ASK-LEO. Thanks to our musical director, Nathan Staten, for, as always, being right on point with the musical selections here. We're talking to Mario in El Paso. Speaking of music. Now, Mario, no one knows who you are. You don't have to pretend innocence or anything. Mario's asking a very interesting question. If I use one of these music-stealing services, a BitTorrent service or, Pirate Bay, which is, I think, is it gone? Is it back? Is it gone? I can't remember. LimeWire, is it out of business? Is it back in business? I can't remember. Because the music industry keeps taking them down and they keep sneaking back. If I use one of these services, is the law going to come, hey, are you pirating in there? No, as a matter of fact, not, because they don't know who you are. So the music industry, which attempts to police this, will then send an email, a note to your internet service provider. They're the only people who know who you are. They can match the number to your name at a particular time and say, send you an email saying, hey, we believe that illegal activity has been going on in your internet address. Knock it off. At that point, you can just knock it off. You have six strikes, and it just gets more and more serious. At no point do you go to jail. Now, you can get sued. In fact, people have been sued and have ended up owing the record industry millions of dollars. But as far as I know, they've stopped doing that. There's some judges have said you can't do these. They call them John Doe lawsuits. The suit is actually not against you. It's against your internet address. And what the courts have started to realize is that's not a guarantee of identity, that you cannot perfectly identify somebody by their internet address. So you can't, but so the biggest risk is of getting sued and owing the record industry a lot of money. But even that, I think that activity is also stopped. So really the worst that's going to happen to you is you're going to get in trouble with your internet service provider. You might lose internet access. Now, if you do, there's the very real danger that they'll keep anybody else from serving you. And that actually is a pretty severe punishment, at least for a lot of us. If I couldn't get online, I would be pretty devastated. I don't think it's a good idea to steal music. In fact, I don't think you have to anymore. For $10 a month, you can subscribe to every record online, 10 million titles, through Amazon, Google, Spotify, RDO, Beats. There's so many services that offer you Xbox Music, that offer you music passes, that it seems like music theft is kind of no longer too much of a problem. Now, on the other hand, movie theft is. Movie theft is. So, I just think from an ethical and moral purpose reasons, you have more to lose than anything else. Your guilty conscience. So don't worry about getting arrested, Mario. But I think it's still not a good idea to do it. Can you afford $10 a month? If that's less than one CD a month. And you get 10 million, every song, 10 million records. And there are ways, of course, as many in the chat room know, to get around this, to hide your identity and so forth. I'm not going to tell you how to do that because I don't want to encourage that kind of behavior. The good news, record and movie and television industry, the good news is don't look at all those numbers about how much is being pirated. Look at your bottom line. I think everybody that's listening to the show is spending more on content than they ever have before. Not just music, but movies and TV show. We subscribe to Netflix. We pay $100 to our cable company. We are spending more on content than ever before. So, you know, maybe we're not going to the movie theater as much as we used to. Maybe movie box offices are down, but you are not hurting. You can't give me that. You know you're making money. The problem is they don't look at that. They look at all the piracy and say, that's money we lost. I don't think it is. I think in most cases, it's not money you lost. If you're a fan of The Hobbit, let's use The Hobbit as an example, or Game of Thrones. Let's use Game of Thrones. The most pirated TV show of the year last year was Game of Thrones. Most people are paying for it because they want to see it right away. The people who aren't are people who can't. They either can't afford it or they can't get cable. There are reasons they can't get it, so they're downloading it illegally. But you've made it easy enough. That's the key. Make it easy enough and affordable enough that people can buy it. They will, because you know what? We love Game of Thrones, and we want to see another season and another season. And we know if you aren't making money, because it's a very expensive show, you won't make more shows. So, you know, from day one, the in the software industry, people were furious about piracy. Bill Gates very famously, in the very earliest days of the computer industry, went to the, was it the Homebrew Computer Club, and yelled at him. He said, you're stealing my BASIC. And this was when BASIC came on paper tapes. Stop stealing my BASIC. And Microsoft has ever since been completely dominated by this paranoid fear of piracy, so much so that they've inconvenienced paying users with the Microsoft, you know, Windows Genuine Advantage and all the there's literally three or four anti-piracy measures on every copy of Windows because they're so paranoid. Adobe Photoshop, same thing. And I think you can make a strong case that the people who were stealing Photoshop were students. They were poor. They would never have been able to buy that $800 program. Many of them learned how to use it, became good at it, and then bought it as professionals. It was, I would say Photoshop in particular, that was probably a good thing. Make it easy to obtain. Don't make people jump through hoops. At a fair price, people will pay. Sure, there's always going to be a 5, 10% who just are thieves, who are cheap, who won't pay. But that's not the vast majority of people who love music, love TV, love movies, and want to support the industry because we want more. Give us the chance to pay for it, we will. And I think the proof is in the pudding. I think you're doing pretty well, aren't you? I know I spend 10 times more on music and television and movies than I ever did before. Because it's easy to do now. Make it easier. Make it as simple as possible. And I promise you people will do it. I think the industry is starting to figure that out, right? They're starting to understand. And part of the reason they're understanding is because they're finally getting the competition isn't the other guy across the street in Hollywood. The competition is the pirate. The competition is the guy who can get it for free. And you don't want to teach people how to do it for free because once they learn, then there's a bigger risk. Make it easy. Make it affordable. Don't be greedy and grasping because we love content. We want to support it. And I think that that's the clear message of Kickstarter and the modern world today. We want to support content. 8888 Ask Leo. So, Mario, don't steal. But I don't think you're going to get dragged off in handcuffs. Maybe you get a lawsuit if they start doing that again. They've stopped doing that for now, and I don't think they're going to start doing it again. I think they realized it was worse publicity for the music industry. It cost them more than it made them, right? So they dropped those. And the courts have kind of said the same thing. This is not a good idea. Don't worry about that. But worry about your conscience. You want to sleep well at night. If you love music, if you love musicians, pay for it. If you love movies and TV, pay for it. And movie industry, TV industry, music industry, make it easy, fair, simple, and we will. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, collecting phone calls, collecting callers for the last half hour of the program. Who do you have?
I have shined up Samson's hair and he's looking oh so good for you.
Samson! Wow, be careful. If Heather cuts your hair off, you could lose your strength.
Hey
Samson.
I don't know if you remember me from last year, I think. I called you because I was having a bar mitzvah and I wanted my parents to buy me a computer.
Did they?
Yeah, Lenovo Twist.
Oh, you got a Twist. Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Awesome.
I'm going on a trip in 2 weeks to Boston with my history class, and I was wondering what would be a good point-and-shoot camera for the trip.
Man, you're milking the rents like crazy, aren't you?
Yeah.
Hey, do it while you can. A point-and-shoot camera. So my daughter went to Mexico for 2 months to study Spanish. She's still down there. And she said, I need a camera for traveling down there. And I said, you know what you need? You need a waterproof camera. You need a dustproof camera. You need a camera you can drop.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That takes good pictures and good video. So I gave her the Olympus Tough TG2. It's a tough camera. And it's a couple hundred bucks, maybe $300. Shop around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful. I gave her the red one. It's dustproof. It's waterproof. Gets you great pictures. You can take pictures underwater with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. I've been very happy with it.
I was looking at a few of them, and there was one for...
Hello? I think his voice just changed. For the worse. Hello? He disappeared. Samson, are you there? Oh, there, good. You disappeared for a moment. Did you press the mute button?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Olympus V?
The Olympus V. Sure, I like the Olympus point and shoots. They're very nice. But I do think a tough camera is a nice is a nice choice for you. The V is fine. I like the V a lot. The only reason I like the TG2 is because it's the same quality as the V, but you can drop it. You can kick it. You can dunk it. And you can even get it dirty and just wipe it off. And it's very, very robust. I've been very, very happy with that camera.
Okay. I'll check it out. Do you have any other ideas?
There's lots of cameras out there, obviously. When you get really serious about photography and you want to spend a little more money, call me back then. But I like that Olympus. The TG2, it's tough. It's really tough, and it gets good images, but tough is good, I think. Tony, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tony.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Leo. Hey, you've been the person to turn to since screensavers, a million years.
Yeah, you're making me. We're going to downplay this old thing now.
Okay. Fair enough.
No. Yeah. I have been here for a long time, and I'm going to say it's an advantage because I understand how stuff works. I've been through this. This isn't my first time at the tech rodeo.
I know what you mean. I can see 40. I remember that.
in the rearview mirror.
Well, yeah. I didn't
very distant.
Okay. There we go. Okay, so anyway.
Yes.
So in all that time, I've forgotten stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why I turned to you. So here's the problem with... Since the XP apocalypse is upon us right now.
Yes, it's here.
Here's the problem. I've got a hard drive full of data that I want to save. I need to save. It's on a 300 gig XP. Two things. One, I was told that I could clone that data to a bigger hard drive, but then I'd have to call Microsoft.
Don't clone. You don't want to clone. This is kind of like a previous caller. What you don't want to do is take more than just your data. You just want to back up the data. That's all you want. The reason is the cloning is going to take the operating system, bits and pieces of the operating system. Boy, you really don't want that.
Okay.
All right. So what I would do is just back up your data as you would. Is the old XP machine still running?
Oh, yeah. It's right there.
Yeah.
Looking at it.
Yeah, so this is very similar to the call we had earlier with Randy. You just back up the data as you would normally, just data, because that's what you want to save, right? Don't think you can move the programs over. You can't. You have to install new ones.
Right. I can do that.
And you want to install a fresh operating system with fresh settings. All you want to back up is the data. Now, you're going to keep your old machine, so if there's anything you need, you just look and you say, oh, yeah, yeah, and bring that over. But just get, you have an external hard drive or a thumb drive, just back up your data and then put it on the new computer, and that's all you need to do.
Okay, what if I was going to do this with my laptop? I've got a laptop here where I do want everything that's on it.
Yeah, you want the data, though. You don't want the operating system. You don't want the programs. You want the data.
Okay.
You think you want the operating system and programs. You don't. Trust me, you're just asking for a packet of problems. You just want the data. People keep trying to do this. Don't. Randy wanted to use LapLink, and I want to copy my settings. No. Just the documents, the pictures, the stuff you made yourself. You can't take the programs with you. You can't. They're tied to that old version of Windows. You know, when you install a program on Windows, it not only puts files everywhere, it puts stuff in the registry. You can't get that stuff out. You need the install disks. So if you don't have them, then you're going to get a new version or you're going to do something else. You just want to get the data off, back it up just like a normal backup, then restore it onto the new computer. That's all. Trust me, anything else, you're just asking for trouble. But the good news is this is easy. It's not going to be trouble. Are you thinking you want to hook up one computer to the other and do that? Don't. Get an because this is also going to give you a good backup. Get an external drive. They're cheap.
Right. Got one.
Yep. Plug it in.
Went to the store yesterday.
Good. You can use Windows Backup. You could drag it. It's, you know, all the stuff in the documents and settings folder. It's, you know, my documents, my pictures, my movies, that stuff. Mm-hmm. Drag that on over. Now, if there is something you missed, you know, I forgot. My photos are stored in a weird folder under the C directory. You can go get it again and just bring that over because you still have that computer. It'd be a little different if you're saying, this computer is going to Goodwill tomorrow. That'd be different. Keep that computer around for a few months in case there's something you forgot.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. Anything else you're bringing trouble with you. And trust me, that's what you don't want to do. Randy, I think, was the guy. Was he the guy from yesterday who had upgraded since Windows 95? he never done a clean install. This is not a good idea. Thank you, Tony. Good luck. Joe in Huntington Beach. I'm sorry, Huntington Park.
Hey,
Joe.
What's up, Leo? How you doing, man?
Not much. What's up to you?
Hey, listen, I went out and bought one of these Android phones from Metro PCS, one of these local stores.
Yeah.
And it started off as a great phone. It's a Galaxy Mega. It's a huge screen.
Oh, it is, isn't it? The Mega's gigantic.
It was super fast. I could watch any video I wanted, you know. And after a while, it just started slowing down on me. Sometimes I can't see video at all. I can't do local chat, all that stuff. Can you get malware and stuff on these phones from downloading?
It's not malware in general. Yes, there is malware on Android phones, but it's not. That's not the problem. There's a couple of things that happens to all smartphones. First of all, you installed software, right? And all of that software, it starts to bog it down.
Okay, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for instance, if you do a complete reset on that phone, it'll be back the way it was before. Be more judicious about what you install. Turn off stuff that works in the background. Turn down sync intervals, things like that, and you can get it fast again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. I don't know. I'm not going to give out the phone number. Stop me, because we got plenty of people, and we only have one more break, and then I'm going to be gone until next Saturday, and you'll forget the number by then. But you know what I should give out? The web address.
Website.
Yeah, because that's good all around the clock, all week long. TechGuyLabs.com. What we do is, as I'm talking, as we do the show, James DeRuvo is writing it down. He's got blisters on his fingers. He's just type. And he gets, kind of the preliminary notes up there, including links and so forth. He's in the chat room. He's copying links, all that stuff. Then the show ends, and we edit down. We've been recording this whole time. Believe it or not, we've been recording audio and video. So if you want to see Heather's princess frock, it's on the video. So the whole time we record. So then after the show, Josh Windisch comes in. He rides his little moped in and takes off his helmet. It's a small guy, big helmet. It's a weird look, but that's okay. He comes in, And he says, okay, now, and he goes through the website and he gets the video up, the audio up. So you can go and you can listen to any show or you can watch it. But then we do something I think pretty clever, if I do say so myself. We divide the web page up into individual pages for each show. But then within that page, every question and answer pair is there. So if you say, oh, yeah, the guy who asked that question about, you know, the Windows XP upgrade, in hour three, you go there and you'll see, you know, it'll say his name and it'll say the question. And you click that. Then you see the text of the question, the text of my answer, and you see a YouTube clip. And you press play and it'll start right there. You can watch it or listen to it. Now, but here's the reason I mention all, I go through this whole thing, is because there's an additional part, an audience participation feature I'd like you to help out with. If you can comment, if you listen and you hear me say something, you go, Leo, that wasn't right, that was wrong, or I got a better idea, or that happened to me, and here's a thought. Anything like that, put that in the comments. Because then I think over time, what we're going to get is a site, and we've got a very nice search and everything, so we're going to get a site where there's a lot of information about any particular problem or topic or issue people might call a show with. And it's not just mine. It's everybody's. You can even vote up and down answers, so the best answers will rise to the top. I'm really proud of this. It is free. That we don't, you know, I know some shows that charge you money to get into the website, or they charge you money for the podcast. No, this is all free. We have great sponsors. They pay for everything. There's no need for you to pay. And it will always be free, I promise. So you can go there and you can search. And, I just think it'll get better and better over time with your help. TechGuyLabs.com, all right? Pam is in Studio City, our next call. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are you?
I'm great.
I bet you liked Tangerine Dream, too, huh?
I did. We were talking about 80s bands. I loved Tangerine. How did you know?
I heard you talking about Kraftwerk.
Kraftwerk, yeah. Yeah, I like that synthesizer stuff, but you and I must be the same age, because I was in college in the mid-70s, and that was very big.
Well,
Flock of Seagulls. Oh, you're young. You're a kid. how do you even know about these guys?
I also know Cabaret Voltaire.
Oh, you have broad tastes.
Yes. my question is this.
Yes.
I need a new computer. Unfortunately, I bought a netbook because I didn't want to spend the money on a tablet at the time.
How's that working out for you?
Oh, it didn't.
No. Yeah.
It comes on sometimes and doesn't. So,
yeah.
It's an Acer, and I just need to get another one now. So I'm looking at the.
You get what you pay for, and everybody thought, what a great idea, $250 computer.
Exactly.
Oh, this is a great idea. And, of course, it's kind of junky, and, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and there was no hard drive.
Right. Is it like 8 gigs?
It's a big, heavy tablet.
Yeah.
So anyway,
you're thinking of getting now. What do you want to get?
Novo, I think the Idea.
IdeaPad, yeah.
Pad, where, like, it turns into, it's got a, I guess, a keyboard, too. Or does it have a hard drive? That's my whole, like.
Tablets do not have hard drives.
I know, but the Lenovo one that switches into it like a laptop.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that? Do you know if that has a hard drive? Or?
So let me look at the Idea.
I want an external one, like I had with the netbook.
Yeah, the IdeaPad is a laptop. It has a keyboard and everything.
Right.
But you could flip it over and turn it into a tablet.
Right.
So you like the idea of a touch tablet, but you'd also like a keyboard once in a while.
Right, but yeah. I also like, well, I don't want like an external like hard drive.
No, it has an internal hard drive, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, so these are actually quite nice. I like the Yoga cuz it's all bendy, but there's
Yeah, they're making everything like all like curved and
well, they're trying to, you know what? They're trying to convince you there's some reason to come back to the store and buy a new one.
Oh God!
And these are nice. They have they're real computers with you know Intel processors and serious amount of storage and all of that. In fact, they up to 512 gigabytes. Now they're expensive because they're SSDs. That's you want that. They're fast. So don't buy more hard drive than you think you're going to need. But do get a SSD because that's going to make it much faster. You will love this. Are you kidding? These are great. We reviewed these. We're very happy with them. The Lenovo IdeaPads, and I like the Yoga series myself, but the apps, if you can find somewhere that sells them, take a look and play with them. That's a good idea. Don't get too cheap. You've learned the lesson. It's a false economy. See if we can get one more call before the end of the day. Monty in Roxbury, New Jersey. Hi, Monty.
Hey, Monty, how are you?
I'm great. You're Monty. I'm Leo. That's okay. Yeah, I'm confused, too.
What's going on? Hey, I got a couple of things for you. One, the Windows, I have a number of XP machines, and I'm killing myself that I got to upgrade them. I have one that I've had for a while.
Well, you don't have to. You know, one of the things that we're saying is that with the proper precautions, it's possible to use Windows XP safely.
Well, that's where I'm headed. I went through the admin users, etc. But one of the things I'm looking at, I know you hate netbooks, but I have one netbook that I've had for 3 years. I love it. It's on XP, and I was thinking about upgrading that, but now I'm thinking I shouldn't even bother doing that. What I was thinking about doing, and if it's possible, can I have a computer on my home network but deny access to the web?
Yeah.
How do I do that? I've been going through settings and things.
Well, I see what you're saying. So you want it on the network to be able to talk to the other computers. You just don't
right.
want it to
I
surf.
I have media files, documents. So I have an NAS. So I just don't want to. I figured I
well,
don't worry
first,
about
yeah,
it.
You, yeah, I mean, are you the only person using it, or do you have to worry about somebody figuring out how to get online?
It's just me.
Yeah. Sure,
everybody else has Macs, and I have a Mac, but I don't use it because I can't stand
it. That's actually a great question. Keep the XP on the network. Now, it's still somewhat, maybe a little bit vulnerable from the other computers on the network. But you know what? If you make sure the XP firewall is turned on, that's going to be simple. A
right.
couple of things you can do. This is a little tricky. I wonder if I can find an article that will describe how to do this in detail. One thing would be to change the settings on the XP computer so that it doesn't have the address of the gateway.
Right.
That way it won't be able to get out. Another would be to modify the router to block internet access for your computer.
Okay. I could do that via either a Mac or
You could say this Mac address is not allowed online.
Okay.
Or, you know, just simply don't configure email and hide the browser icon. You know, that would work too. Hey, that's a great idea. Let me look into it. We'll see if we can get you more information on the website. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the show. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy Show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, The Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.